This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Ashley Thornburg. Coming up in the second half of today's show, carbon dioxide levels in the atmosphere. But we are going to start today with what started as a one-night concert and fundraiser for the Bismarck Cancer Center that has since grown into something very special over the past 10 years. It started when Jill Weiss and her band, the Cottonwood Bluegrass Band, wanted to help raise money for the Cancer Center with a benefit concert to pay tribute for Jill's sister Barb, who passed away from breast cancer. Since then, they've added a 5 and 10K fun run and more. The event is called Bluegrass Goes Pink, and it takes place every year at the Cross Ranch State Park south of Washburn. This year's is this Saturday at 9 a.m. and features a cancer survivor who's raced in more than 150 races across the country with more than 2.5 million people, including more than 300,000 breast cancer survivors. Alicia Heglin-Thorpe visits with Jill Weiss of the band and Judy Pickett, the Bluegrass Goes Pink special guest.
Can you give us a history of the 5K, 10K fun run walk, this fundraising event? And it's called, I should say, Bluegrass Goes Pink.
You know, the history is my older sister, Barb Wild, passed away of breast cancer when she was 50. And at the 10-year mark, she'd been gone that long, and I play in a bluegrass band, Cottonwood, out of Washburn. And I said to the guys, hey, can we just do like a little fundraiser at the park? Cross Ranch State Park is where we host a bluegrass festival as well in June. I said, can we just like throw something together and call it Bluegrass Goes Pink and have a ribbon around a banjo or something and keep it simple? So like a little church group from center brought over some brownies, and it was at 7 o'clock, and we had 300 people show up. And, of course, they were like, whoa. And it was just a one-night concert in memory of Barb. We had Barb's name on a shirt, on the pink shirts. After that event that night, we realized, oh, maybe we should do it next year. And everyone who came out there, it's about a 45-minute drive from Bismarck, and they're all coming out, Jill, where's the food? Like, what are we eating? Well, it's 7. Didn't she eat on the way up? And so we had these little brownies from this church group, thankfully. And then we got the Washburn churches involved. So all 4 of the Washburn churches are involved with making the hot dogs. Hamburgers are done by the Catholics. The baked beans are the Lutherans. The coleslaws, the Baptists, and the Methodists are watermelon. And the Washburn ambulance is pink lemonade, and they hand out Sam's Club cupcakes.
And who is your guest?
My guest is Judy Pickett. She's from Sacramento, California. She actually just flew in. She was part of Nexstar Media's Remarkable Woman of 2021, of which I was a part of as well. So I really got to know her on the video. We were part of a one-hour special, and we didn't get to gather for a big gala affair in Hollywood spring of 21 because of COVID. So I just know her from the show and all what she's done. And she's a Phi Ed teacher and a 3-time breast cancer survivor diagnosed at age 33. And I knew I had to reach out to her to be our guest for this event because she's ran a race in 45 states.
Correct.
But not North Dakota.
Yes.
So I emailed her out, and the rest is history. Here she is.
So we're celebrating 10 years of this. So what are some of the challenges that you've experienced in organizing this over 10 years?
I'm going to say none.
Wonderful.
You know, really none. It's a recipe, you know, and I put on a bluegrass festival in June with 6 bands. It's a recipe you follow. You need to get your marketing organized, want to make sure your churches are on board. We have some sponsors in Bismarck and in Washburn, Rainbow Energy and the Aspen Group Realty folks in Bismarck here, H.A. Thompson and Sons. So we get some sponsors on board to help pay for the shirts and marketing, and I'm a nurse, so I think I'm doing a fair thing on marketing, getting people there. You always wonder, who am I missing? How could I reach out more? You know, Saturdays are kind of priceless in the summertime, and we only have 12 of them in our short summer up here. There's really no challenge. Honestly, the weather could be the challenge. Sure. Once you're there, it could be cold and rainy or really hot. Like it might be really hot Saturday, but we have a lot of bottled water and all kinds of things for you. But there is no challenge. It's my honor and pleasure and privilege to have a really amazing bluegrass band and a community in Washburn to help put this on.
So really, this is a community effort.
Really is, honestly. Yep.
Wonderful. And tell us now more about where the proceeds are going. I was reading, obviously, this is for the Bismarck Cancer Center Foundation to help its patients. In what ways is it helping those patients?
Sure. We have, for our patients, they get a free massage twice a week by a young lady named Courtney. She's 31 and already a two-time cancer survivor. We tease about her. She's the Mandan High School boys basketball cheerleader coach. She is a cheerleader. So when you come off the radiation table and you walk down the hall to Courtney's office for your free massage, and I mean, I'm talking, we've got little old farmer men with prostate cancer who have never had a massage, and we don't even tell them they're going to get one. And then Courtney's like, hi, you know, and the rest is history. And then we have Amanda, our nutritionist, dietitian, special cancer dietitian, has a lot of boost and formulas and feedings and tube feedings and things available to our patients at no cost. We have gas cards we hand out to them as soon as they start treatment. And in the parking lot and across the street from the cancer center are apartments. And so they can rent these for $15 a night if they have funds. If not, you know, we'll make it work for them. We have a social worker who's kind of like a therapist, pastoral lady, Jen, who's also a breast cancer survivor, and she works with emotional needs and works with the families. And we call it wraparound services. Sure. They have a yoga class, art class, support groups. I love what we do. And if I do mention the massages, well, I can't afford that. Well, no, they're part of your treatment. We have a physical therapist comes in, talks to everybody. So it's a really, our foundation, I love that it goes right to the patients. And I get to see that at work.
Yeah, how rewarding is that? Welcome to North Dakota, Judy.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
Is this the first time you've met in person?
Yes. It is. About an hour ago.
So, NextStar Media Woman of the Year for 2021, cancer survivor, a teacher, and you founded the Pink Ribbon Running Club.
Yes.
Can you share a bit of your story and how starting that running club has impacted your life and those around you?
Sure. Yeah, I was originally diagnosed at the age of 33. I was very healthy. I had no family history. It was very devastating because it came out of nowhere. And so as I was going through treatment, I knew that I needed to do something positive with the negative situation I was handed. And I've always been a runner, and, you know, God's given me the ability to run. So I knew I could use my running to get the message out about breast cancer. So I started the Pink Ribbon Running Club, and I have traveled all over the country doing races benefiting breast cancer. And currently, I have run 159 races. This will be my 160th race on Saturday. And I'm trying to run in all 50 states. And as I said, I've done 45, so 46 will be on Saturday as well. But it's really been very rewarding, the people that I've met all over the country, the lives that I've touched in a positive way. It's just been incredible for me, as well as, I think, the impact that I've had on other people.
Well, 2.5 million people that you've run with, and over 305,000 breast cancer survivors.
Yes.
That's incredible.
Yeah, and it never gets old to run with survivors because, wonderful energy that they have, and they're not only surviving, they're thriving with their cancer, and it's just very positive and motivating. You know, it can be emotional as well, because that is the reality of a cancer journey. Mm-hmm. But it really, I think, invigorates everybody and gives, you know, just gives positive vibes all the way around.
Right, right. So 45 states.
Yes.
What's next?
I am running in Rhode Island in October. And then I've got to do Arkansas and Alabama and West Virginia still.
All in this year?
Well, I'm not sure if I'll get it. I work full time. I'm a teacher, so okay. I have to work around my schedule.
Sure, sure. So you're also being honored at the Bismarck Cancer Center at a luncheon on Friday. And this is from noon to one. By the way, it is free to attend. And so you've been an inspirational speaker now for over 15 years, spoken at many events, like you alluded to just earlier, around the United States. So what's your keynote about here in Bismarck? What are you hoping the keynotes are that people can take away and remember?
Just how we all have challenges in our life. I mean, my story centers around breast cancer, but everybody faces some kind of challenge in their life. So what I'm hoping to do is give a message of hope to people that maybe they haven't had breast cancer, but there's something that they have to deal with. And you know, use my experience through breast cancer to give them that hope that they can survive whatever it is they're going through.
Jill, tell us a little more about how the day is going to go on Saturday.
Oh, the day starts bright and early in the morning at the Visitor Center of Cross Ranch State Park. We will have registration for the walk run, and most people just show up that morning. We don't have a lot of pre-regers, but they show up, and for $20, they get to do the race, and then they will get a shirt. We have a lot of children's shirt sizes available as well. We allow dogs on leashes and lots of strollers, and some little kid might be out there camping and ride his bike on the trail, and we kind of let the runners take off and go. We have a really solid amount of runners that come out. We don't time anyone or give them a bib. It's a fun walk run, we call it. Afterwards, we have some orange juice and water and bananas and granola bars and all kinds of things. What we are doing this year, we had about 25 dogs last year do this walk, and it was kind of warm. And so we have pink water bowls all ready for the dogs, and we're going to have some volunteers fill those up, and then they can just, it's one of them collapsible ones they can take them with. And so the run kind of, all that really gets done about 10:30, 11, and then we kind of take a little break. We start decorating the stage of the Cross Ranch State Park. There's a big stage there where we do the music, and we will start decorating that in the middle of the afternoon. We have a lot of volunteers that come up and do that. The Washburn churches, they start showing up around 4 o'clock and setting up tables and getting ready to cook and everything. And so the supper will begin at 5, and I always tell folks, don't come at 7 and think you're going to get some baked beans and a hamburger, because it's going to be gone. So if you do plan to eat, I would come at 5, no later than 6, because when we're out, we're out, because we're 12 miles from Washburn, so it's hard to, you know, run back to town and get more food. So encourage everyone. The meal is a free will. If you're going to do the walk run and come to the concert, we just have you pay an extra $5 at the walk, and that gets you into the concert. The concert at 7 is $10. 16 and under are free. And bring a lawn chair, maybe some bug spray. We will have pink lemonade, water, bottled water for everyone. And we have a little Bismarck Cancer Center store with kind of some homemade items people donate and some free items. We'll have a free table. Everybody loves the free table.
Of course. I do too.
And, you know, we'll have some leftover shirts from the walk run, and people can purchase those for $20. And all the proceeds of this whole event really just go, we just bring the money in next week and hand it right to the Bismarck Cancer Center.
It's
and
fabulous.
So the math is really, really simple. You know, what comes in goes right to them, and that's what's so much fun about it, too. We don't allow dogs in the concert area at 7. We kind of ask that you maybe leave them in the camper or at your house for the night. We had an instance several years ago where a dog attacked a little, I don't know, 3-year-old, 4-year-old. I happened to be there and was able to do some first aid. And so we just really got to be careful. But the walk seems to do okay because they're on a leash and they're just running around and having fun and stuff. So it's a very fun, very beautiful state park right along the river. When you're running on the trails, you'll see, Judy, you're right on the Missouri River, and the scenery couldn't be any more spectacular. It's very nice.
Great. So, Judy, are you going to be up on stage performing at all?
I hope so.
So, do you play music as
Oh,
well?
No, not, no, no.
She might.
Not music performing.
You travel a lot, and you're doing the races, the 5Ks, the fun walks, and things like that. Do you have an entourage that takes pictures of you and PR person or anything like that?
Me.
Jill will be my person.
This weekend.
And if my husband's traveling with me, he loves to do that, but he's not here this weekend.
So what I was more or less kind of getting at is how you're documenting your journey.
Oh, yeah. Just I have people help me and send me pictures and – you know, things as I've gone along.
Do you have a Facebook page? Do you have followers?
I need to increase my Facebook presence. I do have a web page.
Okay.
And that is? It's pinkribbonrunning.org.
Jill, then just a little bit more about the history then of this show. I call it a show. Mm-hmm. We know that it's a fundraising event. You know, it's grown from, like you said, like 300 people. And then after, you know, as years go by, you added the walk and run.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Just kind of tell me a little bit more how that progressed.
You know, I'm not a big walker runner, obviously, but we, some of our staff at the Cancer Center are big weekend. They run a lot. They run, you know, half marathon here, Fargo, Bismarck marathons, whatever. And they said, Jill, you ought to add a run. well, I don't know how to set that up, you know. So a couple of them, actually some good friends from over in Zap, Karen Seiler came over, and she was a very instigator of it because a lot of these runner folks on the weekends, they run a race every Saturday or Sunday somewhere. And some, they are timed, they get big medals, it's a big deal. Ours, we don't do any of that. You know, we give them a half a banana and a hug or something. they're so funny. They love our run because of the simpleness of it. And so that's really a fun part to have added, because it might bring out another 100 people. Maybe they're not coming back that night. You know, maybe mm-hmm. they're coming out, they're going to do the run, and they're off to mm-hmm. whatever they're going right. to do that day. Mm-hmm. So it's another group of people. Right. A few years ago, we had a bunch of folks that ride bike, like, I want to say mountain bike, but they'll go for a 30-mile bike ride, and some of them pedaled on in. We had to give them their shirts early, because when they rolled in, they wanted to be wearing their pink shirts, so that was really fun.
That's great.
I did reach out to a Harley-Davidson motorcycle club here in Bismarck, and they actually had another event this weekend, but I think they're going to plan to roll in next year. And when you see the state park, Judy, I can imagine them rolling in very loudly. I really want that to happen, you know. Miss Vivian, the pink fire truck, will be there. Tracy oh. Driscoll and her family will have Miss Vivian there, and the kids love to jump around and run mm-hmm. on that thing, you know. And the Washburn ambulance will be there as well, serving lemonade and cupcakes. And also Crumble Cookies came on board last year and donated a couple hundred cookies. And we give them out to the survivors. And during the concert, we'll ask the survivors to stand. And it's sometimes over half of the crowd,
wow.
which is not really shocking, but to some it really is. Mm-hmm. And then they get a free cookie and they're happy to take it.
Yes.
No one's
course.
Worried about white sugar and white flour up here. Boy, they're ready to have a cookie and they're honored. You know, they like to feel honored. And then about an hour into the concert, we do this event every year in memory of friends and family and people we've lost. So this year it's actually three ladies from Bismarck. They don't all pass away of breast cancer. It's cancer in general. Margaret Hamron was a teacher in the Bismarck area here for mm-hmm. many, many, many years. Her husband, Harold, was my basketball coach in high school. And then Donna Johnson, her husband is Dewey Johnson, and he's on our foundation board. Big fundraiser for the Bismarck County. We're doing it in memory of his wife, Donna. And then Sarah Stewart is a young lady that passed away of a brain tumor, and she was diagnosed when she was 20 weeks pregnant
oh, goodness.
With her second daughter, did all her treatment, radiation at the Mayo for a pregnant lady. And so Sarah wanted to get her little girl to kindergarten this fall, but sadly, you know, died of this brain tumor this spring earlier. So we're doing it in memory of her, too. So then all of the families come and light a candle about 8 o'clock or so, and some are very quiet and some grab the mic and want to say a few things. So it's a kind of an honoring time, light a candle,
right.
You know, just simple but honorable.
And such a beautiful fundraiser over
Absolutely.
The past couple of years. Then you would say, how much have you raised with this event?
Wow. Well, you know, we didn't have it in 2020. 2021, we had a little event at the Cancer Center parking lot. And all the runners came and did the run and ran all over Bismarck in their pink shirts and stuff. That one, I wouldn't say we raised money. Last year, 2021, we were on the fence on whether to have it, you know, where are we at? I talked with the state health department about COVID numbers and make sure, like, do you think we can do it outside? Oh, yes, do it outside. So we had, when Bob and I were, you know, looking at all the checks, $16,000 we raised last year.
Right.
And there was a lot of zeros behind some of those checks. And one family, I'm like, okay, are you guys sure you want me to cash this check? You know, very, very generous donors last year. But, you know, any amount is just so much appreciated by our patients. We hand out a gas card. They're driving in from, you know, Garrison every day or Linton or, you know, Eastern Montana. I mean, they come from all over the state. So that giving out that gas card and, like I said, the free massages, anything we can do to help that journey a little easier is what we want.
Looking for another wonderful year. Thank you so much for being here, Judy Pickett from Sacramento. Honored guest at this year's Bluegrass Goes Pink 5-10K Fun Run and Walk event that's happening at the Cross Ranch State Park. And thank you, Jill, also of the Cottonwood Bluegrass Band, for helping to organize this event. And congratulations on your anniversary of the Bluegrass Goes Pink.
Thank you.
If you'd like to attend a special luncheon with Judy on Friday at noon, you can contact the Bismarck Cancer Center. And if you are still planning on participating in the fun run, you can find a registration link on our website. More Main Street in a moment.
Arts programming on Prairie Public is supported in part by the North Dakota Council on the Arts, a state agency developing, promoting, and supporting the arts in North Dakota.
Next time on The Pulse, a dying man sues in court to try an unauthorized treatment for AIDS.
The day of the hearing, the courtroom was packed.
And a desperate mother decides to ask forgiveness rather than permission.
I took it. You stole it?
I stole it.
A look back at the early days of the AIDS epidemic and one doctor's passion to find a cure.
That's The Pulse, coming up at 8 Central, 7 Mountain, right here on Prairie Public.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Ashley Thornburg, and with a new moon now, we should have a little bit darker skies, perfect for meteor showers. Here's biologist Chuck Lura with this week's Natural North Dakota.
If you like to watch meteor showers, the next few weeks could be a real treat. That's because the Delta Aquarids meteor shower has already begun, and the Perseids meteor shower will overlap with it. The Delta Aquarids meteor shower started on the 12th and will run through August 23rd. The peak viewing period will occur on the evening of the 28th and early morning hours of the 29th. One can expect to see around 20 meteors per hour during the peak viewing period, and with a new moon, viewing should be quite good. Meteor showers are named according to their radiant, or the point from which they appear to originate. In this case, they appear to originate in the constellation Aquarius. The best viewing will be after midnight. Although meteors will appear to originate from within the constellation Aquarius, they may be observed in other areas of the sky. The Delta Aquarids overlap with the more widely known Perseids meteor shower. The Perseids should be visible from July 17th to August 24th, with the peak viewing period occurring on the evening of August 12th and early morning hours of the 13th. However, there'll be a full moon and a supermoon on August 12th, so that certainly will not help with the viewing. Even at that, the Perseids are known to produce up to 60 meteors per hour, so it's still worth checking out. Meteors, of course, are produced by bits of comets passing through the Earth's atmosphere. Comets are mixtures of ice, rock, and dust a few miles in diameter. When they pass near the sun, the heat causes the comet to shed ice and particles. These mostly sand-sized pieces of ice and rock create a debris field in outer space. When the Earth passes through these debris fields, the pieces collide with the atmosphere and become glowing hot. Viewed from the Earth, they're often referred to as falling stars. Hopefully, there'll be some clear skies over the next few weeks. So consider finding a dark place out of town, then settling into a comfortable lawn chair or throwing down a blanket, and just watching the stars for a while. And while you're watching for those meteors, you may also have some good entertainment spotting all those satellites traveling overhead. I'm Chuck Lura.
Natural North Dakota is supported in part by the NDSU Central Grasslands Research Extension Center. Subscribe to the podcast or find past episodes at prairiepublic.org.
Still to come on Main Street, carbon offsets. But first, this news.
For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster. Seven hospitals and two EMS agencies in North Dakota have been recognized by the American Heart Association for their efforts to improve outcomes for Americans with heart disease and stroke. Agencies across the state took part in the American Heart Association's Get With The Guidelines initiative to ensure all patients have access to life-saving care. Mindy Cook is Senior Quality Improvement Manager for the American Heart Association.
It's been demonstrated over and over again that these performance metrics and guidelines translate directly to better outcomes for patients, longer lives, better quality of life, less morbidity, and less deficits for those patients when they do suffer a condition. It's not just, like I said, metrics. It really does translate to individual quality of life improvements and longer, healthier lives.
Each year, the American Heart Association recognizes hospitals across the country for consistently following up-to-date research-based guidelines.
I think it's something regionally that is so important that the public understands how hard, you know, our healthcare systems are working and how they're coordinating together to make sure that we have great quality care here in the region. And so, you know, however that can be highlighted, I think it is a testament to the commitment of our health systems and the individuals working in those health systems.
And the public is invited to a free interactive learning series during August at the former Governor's Mansion State Historic Site. Sarah Fox is the outreach coordinator for the former Governor's Mansion.
We do a fun activity or we do a learning activity, and then our goal is to try to get people to come through the mansion to step inside and actually go through it, because not a lot of people are aware of what it actually has and everything that it has. Many people think that it's just a house, and it's so much more than that.
Participants are introduced to North Dakota history through hands-on projects.
Next month, we are going to do a program where we create our own toys. We're actually going to create kaleidoscopes as well as something called a penny spinner. We are also going to do a dinosaur day, because everybody loves dinosaurs. And then the last thing that we're going to do is something in August called mini murals. So what we're going to do is we're going to have kids create their own art pieces to be able to take home.
The programs are open to people of all ages.
So the biggest reason to come and visit the Governor's Mansion is not only to learn about the governors, but it is a really great Victorian house that just shows basically what Bismarck looked like in 1884. And that's a really great way to go back in time when you walk into the house. And also there's just a really fun space for kids to kind of go back in time.
For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Ashley Thornburg. The concentration of carbon dioxide in our atmosphere is more than 50% higher than pre-industrial levels, and many industries are grappling with how to reduce or offset carbon emissions. As Harvest Public Media's Dana Cronin reports, the ag sector is becoming a front runner in the carbon reduction race.
It's mid-April on Jason Lay's farm in Bloomington, Illinois. We're standing on one of his 75-acre fields, which during the growing season is covered with either corn or soybeans. And even though this is the off-season, Jason's field is green, dotted with a grass-like cover crop called cereal rye.
And what that does is it helps hold the carbon dioxide or the greenhouse gases. It helps hold them so they don't get released out into the atmosphere.
And these 75 acres of cover crops are holding a lot of carbon.
Roughly, it would be about, hopefully, a ton an acre. So about 75 tons across this whole field.
That's about the emissions equivalent of 15 gas-powered cars driven for 1 year. And while Jason's field is an island of carbon-sequestering cover crops, more and more farmers in the Midwest are experimenting with them, thanks in part to the newly budding carbon marketplace.
I like to equate them to like the Wild West.
Jason is part of Bayer's pilot carbon program, which works like this. Let's say there's a company that needs to offset their carbon emissions. Maybe they pledge to reach carbon neutrality within a certain period of time. They can go to Bayer and purchase carbon credits, which basically offset their emissions. Bayer then pays Jason to plant cover crops, which act as the carbon offset for the company. Carbon programs like Bayer's are popping up all across the agriculture industry, and some companies are going all in, like Boston-based startup Indigo.
I absolutely am a believer that carbon credits are part of the move to reduce the overall pressure on the atmosphere.
Chris Harbert is Indigo's chief strategy officer. Unlike other ag companies like Bayer, Indigo is relatively young and focuses exclusively on sustainability. And Harbert says there's a reason they're zeroed in on agriculture.
Right now, we could get every farmer on earth to change their behavior if we incented it correctly. And they have the infrastructure, the equipment, they're already dispersed across the globe to make that happen immediately. And that would cause a measurable change to our atmosphere.
Harbert acknowledges that scale-up would be very difficult. It would mean totally revamping the way most farmers farm. And that's why Indigo offers short 5-year contracts with farmers, to avoid scaring them off with long-term commitments. But some say long-term commitments are necessary to reduce the concentration of carbon in our atmosphere.
I mean, for the climate, we really need, I would say, durability of carbon stored on timescales of 100 years. That's, I think, what's really necessary to address climate change.
Gianna Amador is a co-founder of Carbon 180, a nonprofit focused on reducing carbon emissions. She says when it comes to making a real dent in the climate crisis, we need to focus on how to reduce carbon overall, not just offset it. But she says paying farmers to sequester carbon is ultimately a good thing, because right now there aren't many incentives for climate-friendly practices, which can be expensive.
What's exciting about these voluntary offset markets is it provides an incentives for farmers to shift practices and potentially helps with some of those financing challenges.
If we want more farmers like Jason Lay, she says, we need to incentivize it. And Jason agrees.
I mean, it's the obvious American answer. You give me more and I'll figure out how to do it.
Money talks, he says. I'm Dana Cronin, Harvest Public Media.
Harvest Public Media is a collaboration of public media newsrooms in the Midwest and Great Plains. Sue Balcom is next.
Support for Prairie Public is provided by Basin Electric Power Cooperative, a consumer-owned generation and transmission cooperative and owner of a large coal-based carbon capture project in Beulah, North Dakota, with over 40 million metric tons of CO2 captured.
It was called an American Stonehenge. A mysterious granite monument, the Georgia Guidestones, was bombed this month. And that revived its long association with conspiracy theories in rural Georgia.
I think what happened with the Guidestones kind of speaks to how pervasive conspiracy thinking has become.
What really happened on the next morning edition from NPR News.
Starting at 4 a.m. Central, right here on Prairie Public.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Ashley Thornburg, and joining me now is Alicia Hagelin-Thorpe and Sue Balcom. Root Cellar Sue joins us once a week to talk about food and gardening. Sue, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
And you gave a little cheat sheet to talk about today. You want to talk about gardening for health. Well, what are you cultivating when you're gardening for health?
You know, a lot of people, I mean, there's a lot more gardeners now than there were like probably 5 years ago because it's become extremely trendy. But, you know, people are like, gardening is so much work. It's like so much work. And I'm like, no, it is probably the single most beneficial summertime activity you can do to ward off depression, get some stretching in. It's considered exercise
and
to garden. You get sunshine and fresh air. And it's just like, I don't look at it like work. You know, I get a lot of crap about being retired and not, I mean, what else am I going to do? Like, I can't sit for a long time because that hurts as much as moving around. So I choose to garden. And I have a huge, huge garden, like lots of garden space. But if I had the opportunity to dig up another acre, I would.
So when people who have maybe some debilitating, you know, something wrong with their body or something that they, maybe their joints don't work so good or they have something wrong with their knees, still good to garden. There are ways to accommodate people who have mobility issues, correct?
Right, because when I started learning, really learning, studying gardening, I started out reading all the Rodale Press organic gardening magazines I could get my hands on, and I started out doing raised bed gardening, which isn't necessarily the what they call raised bed gardening nowadays, but they do have gardens that are raised up for people that can't bend over.
Yeah.
Or if you're in a wheelchair, they can accommodate you that way. But there's also like patio pots and, you know, there's ways to grow a plant here or there. But if you're really, there's just something about putting your hands in the soil. In the first place, you're actually getting some good nutrients and minerals Because if you've got cuts in your hands like I always do from butcher knives and things like that, you're absorbing things from the soil. And just being outside, you know, in the fresh air, no matter what your condition. I have back issues, so I crawl on the ground a lot. I just love being next to the ground. Actually, one of my granddaughters drew a picture on a dish towel for me, and I wish she would have done it on paper. And I'm not kidding you. My nose is on the ground. Aww. My butt is in the air, and the plants are there. And she wrote, "Gardening is where you find your best friends." And I'm like, that Aww. Is so cute, because I consider those plants to be my best friends. Mm-hmm. But you can learn so many things right. about mm-hmm. life from gardening, such as practicing acceptance, because right now we've got people left and right emailing us and Facebooking us. And, you know, Bismarck Farmers Market is 4-day-week market, because when we have vegetables, we have the opportunity to sell. But the gardens are slow this year. So as gardeners, we have to be accepting of the fact that this stuff is going to come when Mother Nature says it's okay. But try telling that to some of these people who are like, I just drove over to the market and there's nobody there. And I'm like, it says on the back of our card, if there's nobody there, we don't have anything to sell at the moment. Mm. So you have to accept the fact that we just have to wait, and we cannot control things. So if you have control issues, garden. You should garden if you have control issues.
I like it's a when good you lesson. Say practicing acceptance, because I'm 4 or 5 years into gardening. And I always say, well, you know what? Maybe it'll be better next year. And I have to accept what I did this year probably wasn't the best move, or I learned something from it and accept it and move on.
Right. Because if you say to yourself, I'm going to plant all these cucumbers and I'm going to sell like 50 pounds of cucumbers a day and I'm going to make all this money.
Good night.
Then the cucumbers don't even come up and you're like, okay, what did I do wrong? What did I do wrong? What did I do wrong? But you have to move on to perhaps the tomatoes. Perhaps it's the tomato year. You know, so you
I have accepted really, that I cannot plant
yes.
peppers. I have accepted that.
I have some outstanding, I think they're called Red Flames, and they are the most beautiful dried red peppers. They're, just gorgeous. But we'll talk more about that when that stuff comes up. So one of the things that I always laugh, we're doing a garden tour in the month of July out at our place. The Minocan Farms people get some people together, and they offer up rides, bus tours, and lunch to go around and take a look at how people farm. Because people have questions about what I do. They have questions about vegetables and high tunnels and raised beds and pest control and soil amendments and mulching and all those kinds of things. So they come around to all these farms, and there won't be two of those farms that do everything exactly alike. So I always tell people the first thing is those gardens that you see in the movies where all their cabbage plants are the same size and there's not a stinking weed in between those rows. There's no such thing as perfection in a garden, you know?
You mean so the Peter Rabbit garden isn't real?
Not a chance. You know, and there are people who might say to themselves, well, then why bother if it can't be perfect? Because it's like when I was designing jackets and I would put colors in things together, and people were like, why wouldn't you do that? I'm like, look around you. If God can do it and get away with it all these years, why can't I? He doesn't plant things in a straight row. You know, he mixes things up. There's diversity in a garden, and there's different colors in the garden.
Symbiosis.
Yes, and right, exactly. There are things that are grown to ward off pests or draw in pollinators. Right. There's nothing perfect about gardening. So when my husband is the complete opposite. I'm quite serendipitous on how I do things. And when he put in those raised beds for me, like we used that kitty catty corner string thing to make sure those boxes were straight. Seriously, those plants don't care about things like that. So we're always in disagreement. This year I tried really, really hard to get my potatoes in a straight row and far enough apart to cultivate between them. Yeah, that lasted the first 3 rows, and then it was all over with.
That sounds like me.
And so the inability to garden perfectly is actually a cause for celebration. You know, there's a distinction between a fixed mindset and a growth mindset. And with gardening, you can develop a growth mindset.
I like that.
You know, as opposed to fixing things in the ground and that's the way they got to be. No, 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 no. I left all this room for my cucumbers to grow south, and they know that there's a fence to the north of them. So they're like, there's a fence over there. Let's go that direction. let's take over the fence. Get it out. Get the tomatoes out of there. We're coming. I'm like, you just can't tell a plant what to do. So you just have to kind of like, rather than say that you failed, which I do sometimes walk around thinking I'm a failure as a gardener because my broccoli didn't head out this year. And then you find out that nobody's headed out because the weather was not conducive to growing broccoli this year. And that was like a huge disappointment. So then my friend Diane came up to the garden the other day, and she's like, you know, if I were you, I'd just pull out those old broccoli plants and I would plant beets or some fall crop in there. And I'm thinking, duh, why didn't I do that, you know? So growth, always growth, and don't fix your mind in the garden.
Well, and you have to pay attention and sort of, you know, be connected. You have to be sort of part of the puzzle.
Right, and be present there in the garden, you know. And so it's kind of like people, I think, have over the years, I met this guy once that said he hates to be outdoors. And I'm like, what? Yeah. Like my brother and I, it's like we go out at 6 o'clock in the morning and just never want to come back in. And I'm indoors and I'm working on some project on the computer, looking out that window thinking, oh, God, what could I be doing outside? I need to go outside. But gardening connects you to the greater world. You know, like our world wasn't created to be all concrete and buildings. You know, it started out as a garden, and it started out as a garden so that you're connected to nurturing plants. You're connected to the food that you eat, because the food that you eat nourishes your body. You know, it's kind of like a great big circle of life.
That's right.
Kumatata or whatever that is. Kumatata, I don't know. That's one of those things. Everybody says that to me, and I'm just looking at them like, I must have missed the line.
Hakuna Matata, it means no worries for the rest of your days.
It's that a problem-free philosophy. Didn't you have any young kids in your life in the 90s?
Let it be, let it be.
That's a good one, too.
Do you want to build a snowman?
Oh,
yeah, I've got grandkids. That's as far as that got. But I must have missed that Lion King thing. So. And no worries. I don't even like that word. I always like to say I'm concerned about things. I don't worry about things, because my pastor's wife always said, why would you pray when you can worry? And I'm like, think about that. You know, so we just give it all to the greater good of the garden out there. Those plants will listen to anything I have to say, you know.
And then, of course, there's eating.
Oh,
food
well,
you
right.
grow yourself.
And your connection. Yeah, your connection to food, which is important. And I think people have come a long ways from understanding where food comes from. You know, I've heard stories about people who'd actually buy frozen mashed potatoes. And I'm like, what? Or boiled eggs? They would buy a hard boiled egg in a grocery store, and I'm like, seriously, people, this stuff is so easy to do yourself, and not only in the garden but in the kitchen, you make a connection to the food that you eat. And then we had a big dinner on Sunday, and we had such a good time, and the food was so good, and it was just such a wonderful time of connecting. And one of the things I do before we eat is I explain to people where our food came from. You know, like so-and-so grew the beef, or I got the eggs from Francis, or, you know, those kinds of things. And so it's a wonderful thing, and gardens are there for you. And you feel like a parent to those plants, you know. So put a lot of care and emotions into my garden, and then that way I'm not always emoting to my husband. So there's an advantage right there.
Well, it's
right?
exciting to see the fruits of the labor
through. There's something very gratifying about that. And they say, too, about children, like with the farm-to-school program, that they'll eat vegetables they grow themselves as opposed to ones that come out of the freezer or the can.
Yeah, I did. One time my daughter had some friends over and there was a guy who was absolutely disgusted that I picked a little cherry tomato out of the garden and just popped it in my mouth.
There are people that won't accept.
He thought it was
disgusting. Yeah, they won't accept that as a gift. They'll look at you like, what? You didn't wash it or, you know.
It wasn't even that I didn't wash it. He was just grossed out by the fact that, like, God, he would eat something fresh from the garden.
Because
I offered
so
to wash his, and he was like, no.
That is
so
sad.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like the snakes in my garden, too. I'm like, if you're lucky, you'll get to see one of them. What? I'm like, yeah, they're the best. They're beneficial to the garden, and they belong there. The Japanese have an expression, shinryoka.
Oh, forest bathing.
Forest bathing, yes. And that is immersing yourself in green. There's just something about the benefits of being in a natural landscape. Looking at green landscape is kind of like anxiety releasing. It lifts your spirits, eliminates stress in your life. And I still maintain it's because this world started out as a lush green garden, and we've been covering it up ever since. And that's just not good. So, and you'll notice the commercials for this, for the national parks right now are about going out and experiencing the green or the quiet in nature. And then, of course, you're mindful of things like if you're not looking at your phone, you're not looking at an iPad, and you're standing in the middle of a forest, you might actually hear a bird that you've never heard before. Mm. Like early in the morning, I hear the owls talking to each other. And it only happens at the crack of dawn. You know, it's still a little dusky out. And there's always two of them talking back and forth. And there's a difference in their calls. One of them is a mating call. One of them might be just generally a call. And then the deer. There's a deer around our house, too, and coyotes. And so if you've never heard a doe scream.
It is terrifying.
It is horribly terrifying. Yeah. Like, it is so bad, and I don't know what happened.
I almost called the police once until my husband, who grew up hunting, said, no, that's a deer.
Yep, but it sounds like a human, doesn't it?
Yeah, it
screaming.
Does.
It is. But those are moments that connect you to the world and the greater good of the world, because then you understand that everything has a place in the world. You're present in there, and the bugs need to be here. You know, like there are people, oh my gosh, the tick thing with the grandkids is a big thing. Like, oh my gosh, I'm not going outside because there's ticks out there. Oh my gosh, my feet are going to get wet. Oh, let me put my boots on. You know, like, just come outside. You know, like these things belong here. Without insects, without birds, without rodents, then things become imbalanced. And definitely without pollinators. Like I read once that if we didn't have insects in the world or birds, in 30 days we would be dead. Like we would be on the demise, because that is all part of the ecology of how everything works together. And so you need to just get out there sometimes and listen to the, well, I always say listen to the quiet, because there isn't really such a thing. Like if you're in the high tunnels, you can hear insects buzzing around. I can hear the snakes in the grass. It can hear the leaves rustle. You know, once in a while, a leaf or a vine will let go and drop to the ground for whatever reason. I don't know. But all of these things are real sensory sort of things that bring a calming effect to you. So, and it's exercise, people, whether you want to believe it or not.
It is. I get sore every year the first weekend that I make it out into the garden.
Yep. My butt gets sore from going up and down and back and forth. Like, and it's good for stretching,
good
you
for
know. Like
glutes.
Sometimes I don't, yeah. Right, I don't want to stand up all the time and move to another spot. So I'll stretch as far as I can in one direction. And so I always call that my garden yoga. So it's a life, what do they call those lifelong hobbies or lifelong sports? They teach like bowling or card playing or something like that. But this
gardening
is way more fun.
We check in with Sue Balcom once a week. Thank you, Sue.
On my stress relief garden. Thank you, guys.
Cottonwood Bluegrass Band invites you to the 10th annual Bluegrass Goes Pink, a fundraiser benefiting the Bismarck Cancer Center Foundation on Saturday, July 30th at the Cross Ranch State Park near Washburn. You can start your morning with a fun 5 or 10K walk or run on the scenic trails of Cross Ranch. Then supper will be served by the Washburn Churches at 5 and a concert by Cottonwood Bluegrass Band at 7 p.m. Wear pink and enjoy some bluegrass and support cancer awareness with Bluegrass Goes Pink July 30th. More information online at cottonwoodbluegrass.com.
This is Dakota Datebook for July 28th. Eldon Wayne Jers was born in 1944 to Henry and Catherine Jers and raised in Hazen, North Dakota. Eldon's father was a baker, and the family lived near the bakery in a small house along an alley. Eldon graduated from Hazen High School in 1962 from the old brick three-story building where all the grades were together. He went to college at NDSU, finishing in 1966 with an ROTC commission. Then he entered the U.S. Air Force, becoming a jet pilot. During the Vietnam War, he flew the F-105 Thunder Chief fighter bomber. Eldon rose through the ranks and held many positions, including instructor for the T-38 Talon and the SR-71 Blackbird. While in the Air Force, Eldon received a master's degree from Auburn University in Alabama. He went on to command the 410th Bomb Wing of the 8th Air Force from May 1987 to May 1989. He also led the Strategic Air Command's 307th and 46th Air Refueling Squadrons and the 644th Bombardment Squadron. On this date in 1976, Eldon broke the all-time speed record for manned air-breathing jet engine aircraft, flying the SR-71 Blackbird, Lockheed's high-altitude surveillance jet. The conditions on this day happened to be perfect for taking the aircraft to its limit. Eldon pushed the jet up to 2,193 miles an hour, which is more than three times the speed of sound, reaching an altitude of over 80,000 feet. Faster than a rifle bullet, the extreme speed heated the cockpit window to 622 degrees, despite an air temperature at that altitude of 67 below. The SR-71 Eldon flew that day is now on permanent display at the Robins Air Force Base Museum near Macon, Georgia. Eldon retired from the Air Force in 1997 at the rank of Major General. The record that Eldon broke still stands today, more than 45 years later. This Dakota Datebook was written by Scott Nelson. I'm Marie Offit.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding by Humanities North Dakota, North Dakota's largest lifelong learning community.
That's it for this Thursday edition of Main Street. Coming up tomorrow on the show, no shortage of news happening in July. It's time for the Journalists Roundtable as we discuss the impact of the Dobbs decision, monkeypox, and so much more. That's coming up tomorrow on Main Street. Until then, enjoy the rest of your day.